Hello and welcome to Cave 76, the only podcast featuring everything important in the realm of unimportance. This is Rami.
And this is Frank. Today, here we are, all jets ablaze. We're fighting and smiting with our repulsor rays as we talk about Iron Man 2. Also, we preview the summer movies in a segment we like to call Rami Loves Marmaduke. But first, Rami.
Yes, buddy.
Betty White is your new personal Jesus.
Well, I mean, to the extent that anyone is my personal Jesus, which is to say no one is. Because as we've discussed on the podcast before, I am a Jew.
Why must you denigrate Betty White with your Judaism?
I don't.
How dare you, sir? How dare you? She is a national treasure.
You will get no argument from me on that point. But why is it, Frank, that after all these years of, you know, of cultural enjoyment, are we talking about Betty White this week?
The same reason we were talking about Chuck Norris 3 years ago. The internet.
Oh, very nice.
For people who are not aware, Saturday Night Live just had their big Mother's Day special hosted by Betty White. A feat that was accomplished through a massive Facebook campaign ever since the Super Bowl Snickers ad, which featured Betty White, caused enough people to say, hey, let's do something ironically.
Well, see, now, I think that's my first question on this whole issue, Frank. And that is, this issue? Yes, this important Betty White issue.
In the second half of the show, we'll be discussing Kosovo, but now the Betty White issue. And
that's right. Do you think that this was done out of a genuine love of Betty White, or out of, say, hey, let's be ironic and say that, you know, of all the hip, you know, up to the minute, like, who are the kids liking kind of guests to have on SNL, let's go the other direction and talk about someone and put someone in the public eye who hasn't really been there in a while?
I think it's irony, pure and
yeah,
simple.
Yeah, there's no love. There's no love behind that.
Oh,
Facebook,
no, I don't think there's not love. I think there's a genuine, you know, this would be awesome. You know, this isn't one of these American Idol vote for the worst things. Certainly, okay. Everyone recognizes that Betty White is outstanding, and her profile was up recently thanks to her appearance in The Proposal. And
sure.
And that really outstanding. Did you ever see that that web video of her on the set of The Proposal treating
Ryan
Reynolds like a piece of crap?
Yes,
that was great. Sure.
That was very funny. I also, you know, she shows up in every recent David E. Kelly show eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's always a pleasure there.
Yeah, but she, I mean, here's the thing. She was voted on, she was put on the show ironically, and then she was... and she came and brought her A game and just destroyed the show in what I thought was the strongest episode they've had this season, or at least the most consistent.
Yeah, I will agree. I agree. It's not it wasn't a challenging, like, cuttingly satiric episode of SNL, although
finally we get to find out that all of our recurring characters have grandmothers. Every last one of them.
You got to get in that MacGruber push right before the film.
MacGruber!
Saving the world with his newly introduced grandma.
Yeah. I thought Betty... I mean, no one owns what Betty White does more than Betty White. It's a combination of innocence and foul-mouthedness and awareness of who she is. I mean, she truly was the first meta celebrity. She said on the show yesterday, or maybe on one of the previews, that when Saturday Night Live came on the air, she was already 63.
Wow. I think she handled herself quite admirably, and when you compare her to some of the other hosts this year, someone like January Jones, who's like a trained, skilled actress, but was completely
really? We're gonna
like
call her a trained, skilled actress. Huh.
She's trained and skilled.
Yes, no, she is. She is.
She is. She's legit. She's got other credits besides Mad Men. You compare that, but her performance was so vanilla. You compare that to Betty White, who really kind of gave it her all.
And sure, they were playing the same, oh my God, old woman says something inappropriate button over and over again. But that's what Betty White has been doing since Mary Tyler Moore.
Right.
I mean,
you can't get mad for her doing her thing.
And she was outstanding at it. I really, really thought that you discussed this on Twitter. But I thought that sketch, that old-timey, like, late 1800s sketch.
Oh, where
Gingy. Yeah, the Gingy sketch where the tomboy comes in and Betty White just keeps chiming in periodically because she's a lesbian. And, I mean, that was an entirely averagely written sketch elevated to comedic gold by just an actress who, I mean, it's unfair to say that Betty White was at the top of her form because she's always that good.
Yes. I will admit I am a huge sucker for that kind of in sketch setting of turn of the century. What's it called? Like Meet Me in St. Louis kind of Americana, Conan O'Brien salesman kind of attitude. It always makes me laugh. Also, what do we think of all the other classic female Saturday Night Live alumnus who showed up to
support? Well, on top of Betty White, almost as a backup.
Maybe a backup.
Although it was entirely unnecessary. I feel like there were all these precautions being taken in case Betty White couldn't pull through a live show.
Yes.
And that's why on top of Betty White, we had Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and Anna Gasteyer, Molly Shannon, and Rachel Dratch and
Dratch back with Tina Fey, yet no visible awkwardness.
Maya Rudolph and missing one,
Molly Shannon.
I thought I said Molly Shannon. Well, whatever. Pretty much every female SNL performer from the '90s and the aughts.
Yeah.
And I thought it was unnecessary. It was nice to have them there because it lent an energy. You know, an additional energy. You would always get that additional guest star.
Yeah.
You know, it's, in some cases, it was kind of difficult to figure out what they were going to do with these characters. Obviously, most of the time, I mean, I think pretty much every sketch was a return to some recurring character from the past. I mean,
the census sketch, which they kind of did with
the sketch, and we had we had Sally O'Malley, and we had the Joyologist, and we had Delicious Dish.
Oh, Delicious Dish!
We had Debbie Downer. We had who else? And we had recurring characters like we had the Scared Straight characters, and we had
Mexican talk show. Do they do that? Do they do that
the
dance
Manuel,
song?
The Manuel
Frank,
Ortiz.
I trust your authority on this.
What?
Do they do that, the dancing on every time?
Sure. Let's say sure, because check. This brought up a really interesting... I mean, it was kind of difficult because there wasn't a lot for Tina Fey or Amy Poehler to do because they had both hosted episodes this season.
Right.
And Molly Shannon just hosted an episode last season, so we were spared Mary-Kath and Gallagher this time through. Where was Sherry O'Terry?
I think it's just as well that we did not have Sherry O'Terry. Well, but
just interesting that she wasn't there. I thought it was a cool sort of melange of stuff. And it makes me wonder if we wouldn't be well off with like an alumni show, like an annual alumni show.
I think there's something nice to it. I think it felt like someone described it as a greatest hits kind of package of SNL, and I'm inclined to agree. It wasn't the funniest hour and a half of TV that I've ever put on, it was really fun and really cute, and
I thought it was really consistent. I thought it was way more consistent, more solidly funny than any other episode they've had this season.
Right, but I wouldn't say... But I don't.
But
think
not the most memorable. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I don't
it's
think
most memorable for having had Betty White on it.
Right. Although I gotta say, I thought it was hilarious. Like, right off the bat, she goes, you know, I don't know what this Facebook is, but someone described to me, it seems like an enormous waste of time.
Yeah, but that's... that's the Betty White patter. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So yes, thumbs up to Betty White.
Yes, we are firmly pro Betty White on this podcast.
Unlike that horrid harpy Terry Gross, who I hear once left dog poop on Betty White's front porch.
Oh my God!
I know Terry Gross is a vindictive podcaster.
They're written scrawled in black marker on the bag was "This isn't fresh air."
Aww. I thought you were going to say, thank you for being not a friend.
Oh, also
acceptable.
Acceptable. Well, folks, unless you've been living under a rock, you know that he's back. The cool exec with the heart of steel, Tony Stark, a.k.a. Iron Man, returns to theaters this week in Iron Man 2, Iron Harder. In this film...
Hold on. How do you live under a rock?
Well, I guess maybe there's a hole underneath the rock.
Well, then you're living in a hole.
Right, but there's a rock covering
it. So why don't you say... Unless you're living in a hole.
Well, you could say people say they live under roofs. You know, not under my roof, they'll say. I guess angry fathers. The day in question is angry fathers from 1950s TV shows.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, Iron Man 2 follows what happens to Tony Stark after he outs himself as Iron Man, as enemies come at him from all sides, whether they be the government, rival companies, or crazy Russian dudes with intense family vendettas.
As enemies come at him from three sides.
Three sides are legitimate sides.
Yeah.
Luckily, he has new allies as well in this new Marvel movie that further sets up this Marvel movie universe.
Anthony, is that you?
My least favorite person on Earth, Justin.
How you doing? You're not the only rich guy here with a fancy car. You know Christine Everhart from Vanity Fair? You guys know each other?
Hi. Yes. Yes.
Yes, roughly.
We do. Roughly.
BTW, big story. The new CEO of Stark Industries. Congratulations.
I know. My editor will kill me if I don't grab a quote for our Powerful Women issue.
Oh.
Can I?
Sure.
She's actually doing a big spread on me for Vanity Fair. I thought I'd throw her a bone, you know.
Right.
Yes.
Well, she did quite a spread on Tony last year.
And she wrote a story as well.
It was very impressive.
That was good.
Very well done.
Frank, what did we think of Iron Man 2?
Well, I can't speak for you because, well, I just don't want that burden.
Yeah.
But I really liked it. There's been a lot said across the internet and in reviews and magazines and newspapers that the film feels kind of bloated. There's no strong defining character arc. They're throwing a lot of characters and new concepts and giving the audience more of what they think they want, or at least more of what they've been saying that they want. And I think to some extent all of that is true. But it's also an interesting thing. I don't think it's difficult to judge this film because it's part of this larger... It's almost a filmic experiment, right? I mean, we're creating
a
franchise out of... five different films with five different
protagonists
and five different directors and visions and aims and feels to them. And I kind of feel like we should be judging these Marvel films not so much on their quality as films, but as their quality their quality as serials almost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we keep getting...
Wait, you mean that stuff I eat at breakfast?
No, I mean the old Republic Adventure serials that we had, that things like Indiana Jones and Star Wars were based on. You know, the old Flash Gordon serials and, you know, these rollicking adventure serials. You know, where you can always depend on the characters to return back to their roots. And I think it's inherent in an origin story that you're going to have that big emotional arc and the... I mean, every origin story has that moment of decision that I'm going to become this hero. I am going to firmly embrace my, and you know, so origin stories tend to have a stronger narrative through line, or at least an easier to discern narrative through line.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas sequels for superhero films and films of these franchises tend to just throw more stuff at you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think with the rare exception, like Spider-Man 2,
right.
You know, in a funny way, this movie is actually most similar, in my mind, to X-Men 2.
Mm-hmm.
Except this movie doesn't have the benefit of having multiple protagonists in the title. You know, or implied multiple protagonists. Because with X-Men 2, you could have these eight different storylines, and they're large, and they're all building towards something. But you don't complain that it's scattered and all over the place, and they've stuffed too much in, because it's the X-Men.
Right, it's a
that's
team.
The name of the movie.
Sure.
As opposed to an Iron Man, it's like, why are we following this person? Why are we following, et cetera? And you've added too many new characters, and why is S.H.I.E.L.D. here? And
right. As I see it, I think there is a through line to this story, and I think there is a lesson that Tony Stark is learning, and that is that, you know, he was dependent on himself in the first film, and he was growing himself, and in this film, he really has to learn to be a team player. He has to learn to rely on other people outside of himself, and whether that is trusting in his father or giving in to Pepper Potts or relying on S.H.I.E.L.D. or War Machine. It's a very entertaining arc because you get to see all these characters. I think there is a lot in this movie, as you said, but it's nice to see it because each new element adds a new shade and a new flavor. And frankly, it's really, really entertaining.
It is insanely entertaining. Although I do want to go back, Rami. And yes, sure. I agree with you that was the character arc that they were going for.
Yeah,
I don't know if they necessarily accomplished it successfully or if it was as engaging as maybe you think it is or at least to me, it wasn't, just because it was kind of a pat thing. And the interesting thing about Iron Man 2 and also Iron Man 1, as legend goes, is that they just shoot these things on the fly with no real script.
Yeah, it's insane, which is insane to me because to understand, for those of you not familiar with filmic production, there's so much money and so much planning that has to go into a shot like this. And since there's going to be so much work in post, it's really a good idea that if you're going to be spending this inordinate amount of money and time and talent, you really should have a clear idea of what your story is first.
Mm-hmm. I think it's well, let's get into the more specifics before we start summing up on the grand scale of things. So we're talking about the script, and Justin Theroux, the actor, is credited with having written the script. He's previously credited as having written Tropic Thunder.
Yep.
Another Robert Downey Jr. production. And what did you think of the script? That was all, I mean, again, part of this working on the fly thing means that Robert Downey Jr. has a huge hand in crafting the story. And I think he might have some kind of exec producer credit. I may be wrong on that. But he definitely, I mean, his fingerprints are all over it, particularly his scenes, you know?
His wife is a producer on the film. I really don't think it's fair entirely to credit just Justin Theroux on this film. It's definitely also Robert Downey Jr. is like really
And
Jon Favreau, absolutely. All three of them have a very solid understanding of this character. I don't feel like anyone seemed out of sorts in the film. There was some stuff with Gwyneth Paltrow towards the end where I felt like they'd done a very good job building up the character, and then they kind of the script brings her not down a bit, but they give her a position of strength.
She takes
and
a step back.
They take a step back as opposed to a step forward, and that feels a little off to me. I understand the criticism that Ivan Vanko, Mickey Rourke's character, disappears, who's ostensibly the biggest antagonist in this film.
Well, I disagree with you on that. Yeah, I think Justin Hammer is the biggest antagonist in the film.
You could even make the argument that Tony Stark is his own biggest antagonist.
You could if you were a douchebag.
You could, yes. but he is the I guess the physical opponent here, and he's given short shrift. I can see the argument that Justin Hammer is the more credible, more omnipresent villain.
Here's
the
thing: I don't think he was given the short shrift. There's a lot of people saying, we wanted, why wasn't there more Ivan Vanko? Why wasn't there more Scarlett Johansson as the Black Widow? Et cetera. And I don't think – I thought there was the exact right amount.
Fair enough.
To leave me wanting more. Had there been a ton more –
it'd be too much.
Yeah, he's not the main bad – to my mind, he's not the main bad guy. I almost thought there was too much Sam Rockwell for all of his glory.
God, I can't imagine a phrase like "too much Sam Rockwell."
Really? Well, but here's the other thing with the script.
Yeah.
And the comparisons to Iron Man 1.
Sure.
It's an uphill slog because one of the biggest things Iron Man 1 had going for it was it was part of that Cinderella story of Robert Downey Jr. coming back. You know, it was part of the Robert Downey Jr. It was the linchpin of the Robert Downey Jr. Reclamation Project.
The Robesance.
Yeah. And, you know, we were, as Tony Stark, we were reminded, for those of us who hadn't seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, we were reminded of what this actor is capable of. And, I mean, let's face it, Robert Downey Jr. is just, Tony Stark is just Robert Downey Jr. And that's great. And it works really, really well. But there was nothing really particularly new brought to it this time around in terms of the script or the character.
Sure.
You know, it's easier to introduce something new than to just sustain that thing.
Right.
Yeah. So you want to move on to the direction, or you have more on the?
No, I think those are all strong points. I think here it is for me. I enjoyed this all the way through, but I think I do a discredit. My liking this movie does a discredit to the people who come in who haven't read comics for 20 some odd years, and it's really cool for them to see the Scarlet, to see Black Widow. And
I thought Black Widow was great. I thought Nick Fury was great.
Right,
yeah,
right. But a lot of people will say, like, okay, well, why are we watching this scene? And nothing's really happening in it.
Uh-huh.
But to me, just the thrill of seeing these characters realized and realized well is so exciting. And any kind of lull that may happen,
it makes you feel
is
as
completely
if...
overwhelmed. Is completely overwhelmed by the fact that, oh my God, there's Justin Hammer, and there's the Black Widow, and there's Howard Stark, and Happy Hogan's driving the car. It's very exciting.
It's as though your girlfriend wasn't fictional. Gives you that thrill.
Her whole family listens to this. Literally, there's so many of our subscribers.
Hello, Rami's girlfriend's family. I believe that you're real.
There you go. There we go.
So let's move on to the direction by Jon Favreau.
Excellent. Okay. Jon Favreau, I don't think anyone would ever, at this point in his career, call Jon Favreau an auteur. But I think he is an incredibly skilled director. I think he's getting better at shooting action. I think he makes his beats mean more than he did in the first film. Mm-hmm. And I think and he knows how to get to the punchy part of scenes, and he knows how to play an audience well.
Yeah, he's got a real energy as a director, and a very it's not a lightness, but it's a breeziness that goes well with the character, and obviously with Robert Downey Jr. The action sequences sometimes fell a little flat. I thought that big final chase scene went on
the chase itself
long. Once they start fighting, I mean, here's the thing. It's tricky to figure out how to make – sounds stupid, but I was – it's tricky to – I was always happily surprised when I was invigorated by an Iron Man fight scene, because really he's a guy in a giant jet suit, and he'll be shooting stuff, and there's not a lot of melee, really.
Right.
Although there was – there did end up being.
Sure, exactly. And, you know, someone pointed out – this out to me, and I thought it was so spot on. Jon Favreau's one of his background things that he does outside of directing is he does like amateur boxing,
right?
And so you'll notice that the stuff that's really more hand to hand in the film is imbued with a greater energy to it because he gets it a little more.
Yeah. Although I will say the Black Widow fight scene was spectacular.
Yeah,
and not and not just for
the Widow's fight. It was so
and not just for the obvious reasons. But also,
yes.
Like like that character had a very specific style of fighting that Tony Stark did not have, and that's really rare to see in films. If you watch The Matrix, everyone kind of fights the same, and it's nice to see that they're putting some thought into how these characters fight.
And there was even
a difference between the way that Tony Stark and that War Iron Machine. Man and War Machine fought, and I thought that was really cool. And it wasn't just the guns, but, you know, Tony Stark tended to be more of the scrapper, the rough and tumble guy.
He's a pragmatist.
Yeah, whereas War Machine was like a precision guy.
Yeah, it's a very nice touch. Yeah. Also, good about that Black Widow fight, the obvious reasons.
Yeah. and one more quick thing, I think maybe my favorite in joke of a movie loaded with in jokes, was the Swingers homage that occurred when Justin Hammer came out during the Stark Expo.
Oh, yeah.
And they were playing Pick Up the Pieces. And I was like, great. And he's doing his little dance. And yeah, he's
doing his little Sam Rockwell Charlie's Angels dance.
Yeah, it was really nice. You want to move on to actors?
Oh, yes. So much good stuff to talk about with actors. It's some of the greatest actors of our generation, and they put on these super suits and they fight each other. That's great. That's worth my $15.
So we've already talked about Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah. Don Cheadle taking over
Doesn't necessarily need to bring anything new to the role. I would have liked it if he had done a little bit more. I'm really kind of upset that it looks like this is as far as they're going to go with the Devil in a Bottle storyline.
Potentially.
It doesn't look like it, particularly from the rumors that I hear that they're not going to do a third.
Uh-huh.
That Favreau's not signed up for a third, and even Downey Jr. seems like he's hesitant to fully suit up for the Avengers movie, which makes no sense.
Right. they're gonna put a dump truck. The public would riot if it wasn't him. They're not gonna do it if he's not gonna do it. He'll do it, of course. At the end, he's at the end of his most recent little marathon with this thing. Of course he's tired.
Yeah,
I get it, but he'll be back.
And it's always nice to see Robert Downey Jr. All by himself and trying to figure things out. And I think that worked. Look, he knows this character inside and out. What else do you want to say?
Someone was pointing out how awkward it must have been to film that scene where he's going through the 3D schematic that his dad got for him, and how ridiculous it must have been to be on set and do that sweeping arm motion at the end with nothing there in that room. I just thought that was hilarious.
And he has really fantastic. I wish there had been more of this. There was a lot of it in the first movie. He has such fantastic chemistry with Gwyneth Paltrow, who is an actress who can go. She's not as reliable as she once was. I think that's fair to say, right? Well, she also doesn't work very much anymore.
She wants to stay on with her oddly named children. No judgment.
No judgment in the adjective oddly named. I think she has fantastic. They have a real screwball energy about them.
Yes, they do.
Always great whenever they're together. The addition of Scarlett Johansson as a foil kind of added to that, although I don't know if necessarily Scarlett Johansson was up to that level of patter, but it was nice to see an interloper
into that little world.
Yeah, and it's fun to see different energies playing off of each other.
Yeah, totally. What do you think about Don Cheadle subbing in for Terrence Howard as James Rhodey Rhodes, a.k.a. War Machine?
You know, I very much missed Terrence Howard in the Rhodey scenes.
Uh-huh.
But not at all in the War Machine scenes, because I don't believe at all that Terrence Howard would have been a. That's a dumb thing to say. Don Cheadle holds a seriousness to him that makes it difficult to believe that he's best buddies with Robert Downey Jr., but totally makes it believable that he's
a military
guy. So skewed on the opposite line of the James Rhodey Rhodes line. But I thought he was really good. I mean,
yeah, I believe Terrence Howard wants to get a lap dance in the jet with Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson, anything more to be said about
that was wonderful. Wonderful casting. She as an actress kind of goes up and down depending on the material given to her. I don't think she's no one's going to confuse her for Meryl Streep, but I think she did a very good job, and she was very credible in her action scenes too.
I'm sure Meryl Streep will be very upset to hear that.
I'm sure Meryl Streep, if she ever wants to play a superhero and character, she'll do a great job. But it's not always will you get like a top tier, top caliber movie star type person in the suit and it'll look credible. And she really did when she got into the action.
Hold on, Rami, are you telling me that we took an A-list Hollywood actress and put her in a cat suit and it worked for you?
But
lightning in a bottle.
I didn't like Catwoman.
Yeah, that was not a cat suit. That was, That was a catastrophe.
Fresh, you're being ridiculous. I can't even say it. It's so appalling. People laughed loud in the theater when that preview played. I was furious.
Lord, yeah, they totally did.
How about our villains? Mickey Rourke and Sam Rockwell.
Mickey Rourke, I thought was very good.
Is completely his own crazy. I think you'll be successful in an Iron Man film if you come in and decide, I'm really going to do my own thing here. And it really works.
Yeah. I thought his accent was not as bad as I was anticipating it would be. Right. I thought he was a very credible menace. I totally bought his. The only thing I don't know why they had to give him the obligatory screaming at the top of his lungs up at the camera above him shot when his father dies at the beginning of the movie.
Guys, filmmakers everywhere, listen to me, please. Yeah. That never works. It only worked with Shatner that one time.
But it's cool, and I wish that he's very good. I wish that the last scene with the last big fight between Whiplash and War Machine and Iron Man had been a little bit more protracted, and we got to see more of his style other than, I have whips!
In my head, Frank, what name did we give his wonderful pet cockatoo?
Oh, I called him Jean Cockatoo.
Yeah. Look in the show notes, folks. Look in the show notes.
No, don't. That script is patented and is copyrighted with the WGA.
That's right. Oh, is it really?
It has to be.
Oh, fantastic.
Movie.
It was nice to see more Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury.
Well, you just skipped over Sam Rockwell.
Oh, sorry. My fault. Sam Rockwell. Want to give the man his due?
Sam Rockwell was insanely good in this, playing a step under Robert Downey Jr. Because here's the problem.
Tony Stark.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to out Robert Downey Jr. Robert Downey Jr., but what you can do is manage to temper your performance in such a way and make it so slightly off and a little bit more sinister.
And also a little more, like you kind of can see the flop sweat. Not Sam Rockwell, but the characters.
Yeah.
Kind of flop sweat.
I thought it was a really effective counterpoint to him. I wish they had had more scenes together. They only had the one.
Yeah.
But I thought he was solid, although I do think that the film went back to him a lot, because he's the only – I mean, I think he's the main antagonist of the film. He's the only one who has connections to the military and the government through a wonderful Gary Shandling.
Oh, yes.
Possibly my favorite character in this whole film, Gary Shandling's Senator
Stern. And what a wonderful end note for that character was great. Yeah. I did not see that coming. I was very excited to see it when.
And he had connections to, I don't remember if he had connections to S.H.I.E.L.D., but he definitely had connections to Ivan Vanko, and he had his hand in many sinister soups. And I thought he did a really fantastic job. But the only problem was, because he was so involved in everything, I saw him a lot. And I got my fill, I think, of Sam Rockwell. If not too much, I got my fill. Whereas I didn't get that with a lot of other characters in the film.
Okay, that's fair. Samuel Jackson's Nick Fury getting more than just a little tag at the end. What was it like to see this character?
God,
in action?
It was so great to remember that Samuel L. Jackson is a fun actor. Like a legitimately, not like a ridiculous, like, and it was a very conscious decision on Jon Favreau's part to have his first big dialogue scene happen in a diner. I mean, definitely harkening back to Pulp Fiction, definitely harkening back. And he brings a very similar but entirely different energy from Robert Downey Jr. that allows them to play off of each other. And I thought he really nailed the part.
Yeah, it's nice because in that one scene in the first Iron Man, you don't really realize what the relationship is between these characters and you don't get a sense of them playing off each other so much. But when you see them sitting down together and Samuel Jackson is kind of giving him the business, you're like, oh my God, Samuel Jackson, I legitimately believe, is the one guy who, when he says no, Robert Downey Jr. has to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has that gravitas to him.
Yeah.
Not that that's surprising, but until you see it, it's like, it's kind of hard to believe.
Even Clark Gregg had some gravitas to him as Agent Coulson.
Yeah. Yes, he
New
does.
New Adventures of Old Christine's Clark Gregg.
Yeah. Choke director, Clark Gregg.
Yeah, very.
Yeah, he is all over the place, that guy.
Yeah, but he was like really good in his like two or three scenes with RDR.
Yeah,
that's true.
RDJ.
No, I'm cutting out the J. The J is silent.
Okay, fine. You know, even let's talk about what definitely my favorite person to see, and I almost wish there was more, was John Slattery as Howard Stark.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
All deleted scenes from Mad Men. Every single scene. There's no way they didn't just shoot that on the Mad Men set.
That was a Sterling Cooper
the
office.
The Grady filter. It was nice to see that. It's not.
I would have loved to have seen Christina Hendricks walk into the slideshow and give him a drink.
Are you telling me that John Slattery is going to be a boozy executive?
With that mustache.
No. But this one has a mustache and black hair.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's Slattery had a really great cameo. I mean, it's a cameo, but I mean, it's
yeah, it is. It is. But I love the idea that he was with S.H.I.E.L.D. I love the the attitude of it.
The fact that he invented vibranium.
Yes. Yeah, folks. Which is, by the way, now that
it's
totally vibranium. Sorry, audience. We're gonna nerd out a little bit here. Yeah, that was definitely vibranium. It was on the map for Africa. Clearly.
Yeah.
Wakandan based.
Yeah.
It's vibranium. Also, did you notice that in the credits I saw that the Stark Expo theme that they play again in the end, that was written by the Sherman Brothers who did the Mary Poppins and the World of Tomorrow music.
I had heard that.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Hold on, we kind of glossed over what vibranium is.
Oh, vibranium is?
It is the metal that is used in Captain America's Mighty Shield.
Yes.
And it is the only metal in the Marvel Universe that is stronger than adamantium.
I don't know if it's stronger than adamantium, because I think adamantium is the one, but...
Is it? I thought, which one can cut through which? Adamantium can cut through vibranium.
Can cut through vibranium, yeah. I can get out my official handbook of the Marvel Universe, so we can settle this right now.
What? Not?
But vibranium, it's actually, Frank, Captain, so that we don't get angry nerd emails about this, Captain America's shield is a alloy that combines adamantium and vibranium, thus making it unbreakable.
Rami, we only would have got emails about that if you had sent in an email complaining to your own podcast. So I guess this is a good time as any to talk about the shout outs and the little Easter eggs, etc.
Before we do, what I think there's one other performance that we're neglecting here, and that is
Jon Favreau,
Mr. Jon Favreau himself, who kind of gave himself a little more to do.
He gave himself a lot more to do. He gave himself gags. He gave himself business. In the first movie, he just kind of showed up and was there in the background.
Yeah, he's very much there
here,
as the valet.
Here he participates in two major fight scenes.
Yes, he does. But you know what? That's completely true to the early comic where Happy Hogan was one of the major supporting characters.
Yeah,
he's right there next to Pepper Potts.
I think it was more weird that he was so pushed to the side in the first film, and then all of a sudden he has so much to do in this film.
It's kind of
like Bernard, the butler in Spider-Man 3.
Oh, I would not go that far.
No, not that far. He didn't come out of nowhere after three movies and become the father mentor.
By the way, Harry Osborn, here's every important expositionary detail you should have known in the last two films. I felt like telling you, but then I decided not to.
It took me three movies to work up the courage to think I was a good enough actor to deliver this monologue.
Awful. Awful.
He was perfectly very good. Yeah.
Jon Favreau, totally legit actor as well as a director. Good for him.
So let's geek out.
Now let's geek out. It was very, it was great. I did not laugh the loudest in my theater at some of this stuff, I should point out, when they showed Captain America's shield, for example.
Oh, that was a really great deflation in that moment.
In a big reveal. And then
I did have to explain.
That's a paperweight.
I had to explain to some people that was Captain America's shield.
Yes, I did too, also have to do that.
Yeah, it was great that it was perfect and whatever. It was a nice deflation in the moment. What else?
What else?
Well, besides the big end spoiler.
Yes.
People were complaining that it looked rubbery.
You didn't even see the whole thing. It cuts away before it's panned all the way down.
Can we give the end spoiler?
God, if you would... let's say, how about
we gave away
this.
Captain America's shield.
Yeah, but it's such a little nothing moment in the film.
All right. Well, it's a major prop coming up from another Marvel film that alludes to another Marvel film. And it should be.
And whosoever is worthy shall wield this prop.
I got to tell you, I'm more excited for that movie than I have been in a while. What with the release of the first photos of what's-his-face, Chris Hemsworth as Thor.
Yeah, he looks good.
Yeah, he does look really good.
It looks like it's right out of the comic.
Also, I am a firm proponent of bearded superheroes. Always have been.
Yeah, they're all going to be bearded in this one, dude. It's gonna be good. Heavy bearding.
2011 is my year.
Yeah, that's great.
I
want to see Stringer Bell in a Viking helmet. That's what I want to see.
There was some other stuff. I'm trying to remember what else there was.
The boxes come from Project Pegasus.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah, they do. One of the boxes that S.H.I.E.L.D. brings to the house.
Would you like to explain what Project Pegasus is?
Project Pegasus is sort of like the one of the scientific laboratories. It's the good guy kind of lab that engineers things in the Marvel Universe. And they're responsible for the superhero team Power Pack. Which they're going to make a low budget movie of after they're done with all their main franchise stuff.
That movie is going to make bank. That's one of the first Marvel.
That
Disney,
or Runaways. Runaways is going to be huge if they do it right.
That's one of the first Marvel Disney co-productions. Right as Power Pack, I think.
Yeah. That's going to make the money. That's a children's superhero team.
Yeah,
I'll explain more in the show notes. Let's see what else. That map where like all this, where they're like, here's all the stuff that's going on in S.H.I.E.L.D. And on the screen, you actually see a news broadcast from the big scene in Incredible Hulk.
Oh yeah. Hey, yeah. You know what else was fun?
Huh.
Bill O'Reilly calling Pepper Potts a pinhead.
Oh my God. Yes. People booed Bill O'Reilly when he came on screen.
That's what happens when you live in a liberal den of sin.
Yeah, enjoy New York. also, Christina Amanpour.
Yeah, got some big name cameos.
Yeah, yeah.
And also Olivia Munn
and Larry King, as played by Stan Lee.
Yeah, for 2 seconds. His cameo gets shorter and shorter.
I think it's just as well. I really do. There's a lot of fun stuff. Oh, and the fact that they allude that Nick Fury's a bit older than you would believe, because he acts as though he knows Howard Stark very well in the film.
So I guess to sum up, yes?
Iron Man 2.
Super fun. Super fun.
Super fun. It's not trying to be.
Don't give me that. It's trying to be the best damn action movie it can be. I'm sick and tired of people saying, look, it's not trying to be a good movie. It's one of those things shut off your brain at the door.
First of all, I'm a firm disbeliever of shut off your brain at the door. I'm saying it's not trying to be high art. I think you can be great and be not high art.
I would argue that greatness in the field that it's aiming for constitutes high art.
Okay, but it made for another time. But either way, a very, very, very solid, enjoyable night at the movies.
Iron Man 2 is freaking great. If you liked Iron Man 1, it's another 2 hours of more of what you liked from that movie. And it's an interesting jumping off point in trying to figure out what these next three Captain America, Thor, and the Avengers movies are going to be. Oh, and I don't think, Rami, we've talked about the fact that Joss Whedon is directing the Avengers movie now officially.
Right.
And has done a rewrite.
Well, it really only means two things. The most beloved character in the film will die.
Yep.
So I guess based on fan reaction right now, that means Iron Man.
Yeah.
And Nathan Fillion will now play Hawkeye.
Yeah, there's no way. There's no way not. all right. Okay, everybody. Now we're going to take a look into the future.
The future, Frank?
That's right, old friend. All the way to the summer of 2010.
Why, that's what's coming up right now.
In the year 2010. In the year 2010. So this is our big summer movie preview where we will go week by week or get it at least as far as we can in half an hour and discuss what we're looking forward to, what is going to be a blight on humanity, and what is somewhere in between.
There you go.
And it's the in-betweeners that are going to be our favorite films.
Probably not, because they're so in between.
Yikes. All right, so of course we kicked off this week with Iron Man 2.
Already one for the W column, I think.
Yes, and also babies.
Babies! Because it's impossible to see babies for free anywhere else in the world.
I loved Ebert's review of Babies, where he said, if you're a parent and you get a babysitter so that you can go out and spend the night at Babies, you're just going to be even more exhausted. yeah, I do not. I mean, I see the appeal of the film.
Yes. I don't know, it'll do well, I think, in its own little...
I can't imagine watching... I mean, it's really good counter-programming, I guess, for Iron Man 2. There was no other movie that came out this Mother's Day.
Right.
All right, so looking ahead to May 14th, we have Ridley Scott's Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Which we've talked about on this podcast before.
We have. But let's
do a little quick recap. Rami, what do you think... has your opinion changed at all since we've last... Have you seen anything
No, I'm still firmly in the, I'm going to see it, but my interest in it is limited. I'm waiting for the film itself to surprise me. Nothing in the advertising has gotten me even remotely excited for this film.
My favorite part of, because we saw the trailer for this in front of Iron Man 2, and it's a new trailer that we saw, and they say, see the true story that inspired the legend. And then they cut to like a giant bow and arrow, like catapult style bow and arrow being launched by
Maximus Decimus Meridius.
By freaking Kate, Kate Blanchett in like knight's armor. Not even a little bit true.
Nope.
Okay, next movie, Letters to Juliet.
Well, I think Frank and I have been talking about Letters to Juliet all this time.
I don't even know what this is.
Yeah, I don't. I think there's like it's
Amanda
the same
Seyfried
Gal like, Garcia Bernal.
Is it based on
Nicholas Sparks? I don't think it is. No.
Looks sure as hell looks like it.
Yeah, it sure does.
And Just Right.
Just Right.
Queen Latifah in common. There is so much advertising for Just Right in New York right now.
Oh, yeah?
That's much. Very funny. Huge billboards everywhere.
Oh, great. The, Queen Latifah is a perfectly charismatic screen presence. The movie will do well. Common, I think, has been kind of building up his acting chops. Whatever.
Let's not lie and say we're going to see this movie.
No, we're not going to see this movie.
All right.
Let's move on. May 21st weekend.
Shrek Forever After, also known as Shrek Goes Forth, also known as Shrek the Final Chapter in 3D, also known as Why?
Enough is enough is enough.
Oh, it's really... God, seeing every trailer for this is just really...
And I'm not falling for it this time, Frank. I fell for it in the third one. I was like, oh, Seth Rogen has a voice in it, and Sean Krasinski has a voice in it, and all those actresses, like your Amy Poehlers and whatnots had voices in it. I'm like, they're very edgy. Maybe they'll bring a... No, not falling for it this time. Throw all the John Hamms and Craig Robinsons at me.
Zach Galifianakis.
Ugh. It's not happening. It's not happening. I'm not doing it. I'm going to see this movie, aren't I?
Yeah, we probably are. No, you know what? I'm taking a stand. I'm taking a stand now. I am not going to see this movie in theaters. I refuse to contribute to this movie in theaters. Just because, look, if they're not going to try... The first Shrek was great. I even liked the second Shrek. If they're not going to try anymore, then I am not going to reward their stubbornness.
I'm certainly not going to reward the... horrible, horrible puns on these posters. Oh, I am totally ogre it.
Rami, it ain't ogre till it's ogre.
What? Also, should you really be encouraging kids to say, what the Shrek just happened? That's terrible.
I hope that becomes a thing, though.
Yeah, exactly. What the
Shrek? And speaking of ironic catchphrases, MacGruber!
The early... buzz on this is incredibly positive.
Yeah, it was directed by Yorma Taccone, who also directed Hot Rod and is also one of the masterminds of Lonely Island, who write and direct all of the SNL digital shorts and everything I've heard about this movie and everything I've seen from this movie makes it look uncommonly good.
Will Forte, I think, deserves a mainstream hit because his not deserves, but it'd be cool to see him get that kind of success because his sensibility is very odd, like deliberately so.
Yeah.
And but he's really funny, and I, you know, Kristen Wiig is all, you know, very, she's growing her fan base, and it's nice to see her in a prominent featured role. And Val Kilmer is always good when he does, when he chooses to be funny.
And, as the villainous Dieter von Kampf.
And Ryan Felipe, I just, you know.
Who is also there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
This is a weird thing. It's like we have a Will Forte starring action comedy that has brand recognition.
Yeah.
Like, and part of that is the MacGyver connection, but also part of it is just MacGruber. And they've been slowly building that character for a while, and I'm shocked we're not exhausted with. I'm shocked I'm excited for this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it should be pretty damn good. Wait, didn't Yorma Taccone also play the monkey in Land of the Lost?
Yes, he did.
Cave 76 favorite, Land of the Lost.
Yes, that's right.
What's the name of that damn monkey?
Come on, what's his name? Let's talk about our business model. What's his name?
Come on, Gleep Glop.
That's not it. Hold on, I'll tell you what it is. Chaka.
Oh, man. Hey, guys. I know we've steered you wrong a couple times before. We're going to do it again. Go watch Land of the Lost.
It's going to be on HBO this month, you guys.
Is it
check
really?
It out.
Oh, I'm going to check it
out. Yeah, it is. It's
going to
be super free.
It's going to be
to the extent that anything is free on HBO, which is not.
All right. Closing out May, we have Mike Newell's Prince of Persia: The Sands of Time, rated R.
There are no Persian actors were harmed in the making of this film because there are
no Persian actors employed in the making of this film.
Right. Technically, I guess they'd be Iranian actors, but it doesn't matter. There's nobody from that part of the world in this movie at all.
Gemma Atherton.
Hooray. Oh.
And there's potential for cool time bendy stuff. Of course, this is based on the reboot of the classic video game series from the 80s.
Didn't he wear a turban originally in that first video game? I guess not
no,
in the re-
no no he didn't.
But in the original in where it's like
I don't
you
think
could
he
only
did
jump.
That either. No.
All right, I know the bad guy did. All right, but
yeah, we'll see how this goes. This could go either way, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's,
I don't know the writers on this film.
So no, it's not. It's not.
It's not Elliot and Rossio. No.
Oh, really? Because this looks like it's them all over.
Doesn't
but...
it? Yeah. Ted Elliott, Terry Rossio, who wrote the Pirates trilogy and Mask of Zorro and Aladdin.
John.
Maybe they exhausted all of their scimitar buckling on Aladdin. I don't know.
It's possible. Executive produced by John August and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer.
No kidding.
Yeah, I think August actually did a.
Bruckheimer makes sense.
Yeah, it has. It could be a Pirates of the Caribbean. We'll see as it gets closer.
Sex in the City 2.
Oh my God! Can you believe?
Moving on.
It's Abu Dhabi-tastic.
Good Christ.
Jean-Pierre Jeunet actually has a movie coming out that weekend.
Yeah, he has Micmacs coming out that weekend. That played at Columbia this week, and I heard it was just okay.
Yeah, the director of Amelie, which everyone should see, and the director of Delicatessen, which everyone should see. This great kind of whimsical French director who returns to whimsy after a very long engagement, which was kind of serious, pretty serious-minded.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm not a huge Jean Genet fan. I mean, I admire a lot of what he does, but I was not as taken with Amelie as everyone I know is.
Well, you live your life like that, so
it's true. It was more of a documentary surprising. Than anything else.
Yeah.
All right, moving on.
Yeah.
On June 4th.
Yeah.
Killers.
Moving on.
Catherine Heigl and Ashton Kutcher. Well, at least they're getting the jump on Night and Day.
Yeah. Yes, that is a similarly. This is basically just. Isn't this movie just the big hit?
It looks like it might be. Yeah, it's what is it? It's that Katherine Heigl marries a guy, marries Ashton Kutcher, who she finds out after they're married is a contract killer. Yeah,
But she's not. That's why I say big hit and not Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Right.
Also, I kind of love how Katherine Heigl, after making her big stink about how degrading to women Knocked Up was, is prominently featured in this poster holding the gun like it's a dead bug. Like, because because we wouldn't want women to look weak and inferior, would we, Katherine Heigl?
Yeah, we want them in sexy cat suits throwing tiny grenades at people.
Hey, hey, she was very empowered and spoke multiple languages.
Mm-hmm. Also this week, Get Him to the Greek by director Nicholas Stoller, which is, of course, the spin-off movie, I guess, of Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah.
Starring one of the Russell Brand as Rocker Aldous Snow. And yeah. Jonah Hill as someone entirely different, which I don't think anyone realizes.
But no one will care either, I think. Lots of good people this week. Nicholas Stoller, I think, is one of the most, outside of Greg Mottola, is the, I think, savviest director in the Apatow stable. And should be good. I think everything that made Sarah Marshall great will also hopefully make this one. Apparently, Puff Daddy is amazingly hilarious.
Oh, and Aziz is in this one.
Aziz is in it. Nick Kroll is in it. Elizabeth Moss from Mad Men is in it. Someone very funny is playing a Fergie-like character. I'm blanking on who. Rose Byrne from what's it called? From Damages.
Also on June 4th,
Marmaduke! No!
Oh, Marmaduke, no!
Marmaduke, no!
Cashing in on that sweet, sweet Chipmunk's money.
That sweet, sweet Chipmunk Garfield money, too.
Yeah. All I'm going to say about this movie is, do you think the people will be able to hear them talk or not?
No, I don't think the people will be able to hear them talk. But I think only the dogs will hear each other talk. All the animals will be able to understand each other, but not the people.
That's a shame.
Yeah, you think so?
Because we all know that's what made Alvin the Chipmunk so successful.
If for no other reason than to keep Lee Pace and Drudy Greer, who are two wonderful actors that I really enjoy, out of the unemployment line, I'm glad this movie exists. But I'm not glad this movie exists at all.
Also, this week, Splice by Vincenzo Natali, starring Adrian Brody and Sarah Pauli, which has been getting a lot of buzz in genre circles. Yeah,
yeah. I think this premiered at Sundance and was very popular amongst the nerd sites that we follow.
The idea is that it's two scientists who have developed a new form of life that ages rapidly. That's a combination of
Pizza Hut and Taco Bell.
Yes.
No, it's like kind of a mutant human. And actually, at one point, I think the character is actually played by an actress, but she's got kind of prosthetic.
She's got raptor legs.
She got raptor legs. She also got she kind of got Arrival legs. Do you know the Arrival where their knees are inside?
I don't know what you're saying.
Have you not seen the Arrival, Frank?
No, I haven't.
Oh my god, you got to rent it or Netflix it or something it, and we'll talk about it next week.
I don't why.
Oh, no.
Is that the Charlie Sheen one?
Yeah.
Oh.
Trust me.
All right.
Trust me, The Arrival.
All right.
It's insane.
All right.
But this looks very cool. This could be a very interesting... What are those familiar strings I hear a-stirring? Awesome A-Team theme?
The A-Team was so awesome that they broke through an extra weekend early to steal Splice's thunder in their van.
Oh.
On June 11th, we have the A-Team movie starring Liam Neeson as Hannibal, Bradley Cooper as Murdoch, Charlton Copley from District 9 as... No, wait. Charlton Copley is Murdoch. Bradley Cooper is Faceman.
Yeah.
And Rampage as B.A. Baracus.
Quentin Rampage Jackson, who I just saw in a UFC fight the other day when I was at a sports bar. That's right, a sports bar. I watched a Laker game. Hello.
I don't even want to.
Don't even bother.
This film is directed by Joe Carnahan, a director who I feel I'm supposed to like better than I do.
Yeah, he did Narc, which I really enjoy, and he did...
He did do Narc.
Yes, he did.
I'm thinking he also did SWAT.
No, he didn't.
He did SWAT.
Did he?
Yeah, he did SWAT. You're either SWAT or you're not.
He did not, dude. I'm looking at it right now. He didn't. He did Smoke and Aces is what he did.
I'm looking at SWAT right now.
Yeah, and who's the director of the film?
Clark Johnson. What the hell? Then why is SWAT... IMDb has all of their info entirely wrong then. Because on the IMDb preview thing, it says the buzz. SWAT was a rather huge success several years ago.
Yeah, but
so there's
maybe
no reason to believe. But oh, they're making the TV comparison
that it's a TV show. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he directed Smoking Aces, and I wasn't a big fan of that.
Right, right, yeah. Very cool premise, kind of squandered in the film.
But A-Team.
Could be good. If for no other reason, it will meet my quotient of tank dropping out of plane to fire at something quotient for the summer.
And we know that quotient is very high.
Yes, it is.
Also this weekend, The Karate Kid.
I will award this movie 5 Rami bonus points for not using the song Kung Fu Fighting in the trailer.
I will deduct 5 Frank points.
Uh-huh.
For not, but it only would have worked if that was all you heard on a loop. No dialogue. Like, they were still moving their mouths, but Kung Fu Fighting was just playing over and over.
Uh-huh.
You didn't hear any of the dialogue because it was so thoroughly drowned out. In fact, if the movie is just that song over and over again. That is the big complaint, right? Is that he's in China, not Japan, so he's technically doing kung fu, not karate, and yet they're calling it the Karate Kid.
Yeah, yeah. That's the big complaint.
Yeah.
Not the nepotism run rampant that is Jaden Smith, nor the attempt to make...
Jaden Smith's not terrible. Obviously, he has some connections. I just think the idea is pretty... shaky of remaking The Karate Kid.
We don't need to make this. This is superfluous. I'm sorry.
All right, moving on.
Moving on. Great week. June 18th.
Toy Story 3. Did you get out to that preview screening?
I didn't. And you know what? I wouldn't want to.
Did this weird thing where it was like a
cliffhanger.
Yeah,
screening.
Cliffhanger screening where they showed you the first two-thirds of the movie and then you had to come back later to watch it again, or you have to pay to watch the whole thing.
Right. It's wonderful promotionally, but it would drive me nuts as a viewer. I couldn't handle going and watching half the movie and then being like, I have to wait another month?
Yeah, I'm really excited for Toy Story 3. Even though it has become kind of an annual tournament of all the prognosticators jockeying and saying, is this the one that Pixar drops the ball on? And I really hope it's not this one. From everything I've seen, it looks like they're firing
Frank,
all cylinders.
Frank, are you excited for a Latin Buzz Lightyear?
I don't know if you saw this week, they just put up on the internet a short snippet of the Gypsy Kings cover of You've Got a Friend in Me.
Oh my God.
Officially hitting the Frank trifecta of for this song of people I love doing a cover of it after Robert Goulet covered it last. Yeah,
I know. There's no way they're topping Goulet.
They're doing a Spanish version of You've Got a Friend in Me that if I can snatch some of, I'll throw up on the podcast.
Oh, that is phenomenal. That is amazing.
Yeah. I think it'll be good.
Yeah.
Also this week, Jonah Hex, which finally got a trailer last week.
That's what you want to do when your movie's coming out in June, and it's May.
Yeah, Jonah Hex, the other comic book movie this summer.
There's no other one
I can't think of, right?
Scott Pilgrim?
Well, that's not really a comic book. That's more of a life experience.
There are elements of this film that appeal to me enormously, like the fact that Mastodon, the punk band Mastodon, does the score, or the fact that it was original. The first draft was by Neville Dean Taylor, who did the Crank movies,
or the fact that it has a horse with two Gatling guns attached to the side,
right? Or or the fact that it's got Megan Fox dressed as a saloon
girl.
I am incredibly misogynistic in this podcast.
Yeah, it's a gunslinging Western based on a comic book. Josh Brolin plays a man with a hideously scarred face. He was a Civil War soldier in the South. And none of this matters. Zombies or ghosts or some nonsense. It looks like, and the rumor is that they brought in Jimmy Hayward, who directed some animated thing. Horton Hears a Who.
Yeah,
the director of this.
That's who I would attach to this.
Well, trail. But then they got whatchamacallit, what's his face from I Am Legend.
Oh, Mark Lawrence.
Francis
Lawrence.
Francis Lawrence to do reshoots. This definitely has a very Constantine feel to it.
This feels like what it feels like is a mess, frankly.
I'm going to see. It's got Will Arnett in a serious role. If I saw Monster in Law, I'm sure as heck going to see Jonah Hex.
Yeah, yeah.
It might not be as terrible. This might be the fun, stupid movie we see this summer. Come on.
Oh, no, I've got my pick for the fun Super Movie. Well, I'm excited to get to it.
All right. Also this week, Cyrus from the Duplass Brothers, starring John C. Reilly. Well, don't call it that because they're trying to break out of that. They don't like being referred to as Mumblecore. They just,
it's very funny. Movies. Everyone in Mumblecore doesn't like to be called Mumblecore.
Yeah. Starring John C. Reilly, Marissa Tomei, and Jonah Hill. And it's the story of John C. Reilly is a lonely single man who starts dating Marissa Tomei and comes up against her a little bit too old son who still lives with her, played by Jonah Hill.
Right. Now, in the previews, they try to sort of make it look like it's Step Brothers. But according to the early word I've heard and the reviews I've read, that's definitely not the case. This is a serious dramatic turn for both of these actors.
Well, but I heard it's a comedy as well, Rob.
Yeah, but it's not a broad comedy. Let me clarify.
All right. And then the week after this, of course, is Rami's real guilty pleasure, The Twilight Saga Eclipse.
What calendar are you looking at IMDb?
July 2nd.
We're talking about, what about 25th? You got Grown Ups and Night and Day.
Wait, oh, I skipped one then.
Yes, you did.
All right, Grown Ups.
It's a lot of famous people. The movie will do well.
It's the latest Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah, it looks completely disposable.
I probably won't see it.
No, probably skip it. And Night and Day.
Night and Day, I'm really excited about.
Could be fun. Could be a lot of fun. I'm very intrigued by the prospect of Peter Sarsgaard playing a villain, tracking down super spy Tom Cruise, and
I like Tom Cruise when he embraces his silliness.
Yeah,
I generally do, and Cameron Diaz is good. She can be good if she's roped in.
Yeah,
sure. And I think it's gonna be. I think that movie's gonna be a lot of fun. I think. It's,
hopefully, hopefully.
I'm hoping we will all be surprised by Night and Day.
Yeah.
All right. Now all can right, I
back to July
now? 2nd. Now can I move on to Twilight Saga Eclipse?
I'd rather you didn't, but okay.
This is a rough week, Rom. This is either the Twilight Saga Eclipse, uh-huh, or M. Night Shyamalan's Last Airbender.
Now, why on earth did they change the name of this cartoon? That was Avatar the Last Airbender.
Hmm. So we're just not going to talk about Twilight Eclipse. Is that what's up?
What is there to say? The people who like this movie will go see it in
drones.
Yeah,
this movie's going to be the most.
Will stay away.
This movie's going to make more money than any other movie this summer.
I think it's interesting that the arc of David Slade's career has been Hard Candy, 30 Days of Night, and then this.
I like that when he was doing 30 Days of Night, he talked a lot of smack about Twilight and said it was ridiculous. And then he had to go online and remove all those comments when he got the job directing this film.
Oops.
And M. Night Shyamalan's Last Airbender, based on the Nickelodeon. It's not an anime, actually. Did you know that?
Is it produced in America?
It's produced in America, but it's meant to ape anime.
Anime style.
Yeah, it's thoroughly incorporate anime style.
You know, Gene loved this show.
A lot of people say it's really good. I'm still kind of nervous about seeing M. Night Shyamalan's name anywhere near anything, but.
Yep. Good director, lousy writer.
Well, he didn't. I don't think he wrote. Oh, did he? I bet he did. Oh. Well, but it's based on pre-existing material, so there can't be that much of a twist, right?
Right. Oh. I'm excited to see Asif Bhanvi as Commander Zhao in the film.
Oh, M. Night Shyamalan's the sole writer on this one.
Yeah. Yes. Have fun, Frank.
Oh, you're gonna go see it.
I doubt it. July 9th.
July 9th. Despicable Me. A curious
this
thing.
This looks very. If this is going to be
I
good.
I don't know.
It's going to be very good.
I have no idea what this film is. Every time I see a different trailer for this film, it's something entirely different.
Yeah, they're highlighting different things because they really want to.
Or because they don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's possible. As far as I can tell, it's about the Swords. Best supervillain or second best supervillain tried to get the title back from the current greatest supervillain, and he takes on some orphans and he's got some helper creature thingies. There's a lot going on in this.
They're telling me to like these henchmen too much. These henchmen characters. They're selling them too hard to me.
What they're like the penguins in Madagascar, or the army men in Toy Story, or take your pick.
Yeah. Also, this...
very cool voice cast though. I'm very excited for Julie Andrews and Jason.
I can't get too excited over an animated voice cast anymore.
Because
when a film like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs comes out of nowhere with just a solidly cool cast and nails it, you know, what the hell's the point? And Pixar's been doing without it for years.
Very true. Very true.
You know who has a really impressive voice cast? Shrek Goes Forth. All right. Predators also this week. I don't know if it's a remake. It's a something.
It's not a remake. It's they're all criminals who get
shut off to the Predator planet.
To the Predator planet. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Could be very cool. They're kind of inverting the original Predators.
Directed by Nimrod Antal, who had Doomsday. Is that right?
No, that's somebody else. This is the guy who did Control, and then he just did the American films.
Oh, Armored.
Armored, yeah, and Vacancy, the horror film Vacancy.
And it's starring Adrian Brody and Lawrence Fishburne, Topher Grace.
And Danny Trejo.
Yeah, because this is a Robert Rodriguez-produced joint, which gives me some hope for the whole thing.
It looks pretty cool. The preview looked pretty solid. It felt like the original Predator.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad thing to feel like, especially since the franchise has kind of been so maligned in Alien versus Predator movies.
Oh, man. I'm looking at July 16th, and I'm wondering why they're doing this. I don't know why.
Wait, Frank, you missed our previous Columbia alum, Lisa Choldenko's newest film, Kids Are All Right.
Yes, I did. I don't know.
I think it looks good, actually. I saw the preview for it. This is an independent film with Annette Bening and Julianne Moore as a lesbian couple trying to get pregnant. Looks pretty good, actually. Mm-hmm. July 16th. What are you confused about?
They put The Sorcerer's Apprentice up opposite Inception.
I think maybe Inception has an older audience. The Sorcerer's
Apprentice not at all.
You don't think so?
Not at all. I think
This is the live action Disney action film that they're marketing towards kids. Is it not?
They're not marketing it towards kids at all, Rami. Their marketing is like a big crazy action movie.
Well, I happen to know someone. Who could answer that question about Disney's marketing on this film? I will get in touch with her and we will talk about it next week.
Well, I don't know who they're aiming to market towards, but for everything I've seen about it, it seems very, you know, Corona? It's got a very intense. Yes, John Turtletop, who directed the National Treasure movies.
So it's a family.
Nicolas Cage. I'm actually stupidly excited for it because I'm an idiot.
Well, Nick. First of all, I think Nicolas Cage is in a definite upswing.
And Nicolas Cage is looking to be at his scenery chewing best in this. And it's got Jay Baruchel, who I like. Look, I'm gonna see this movie, and I'm gonna feel the dumber for it. You know what? Thank you, Inception, for making sure that I will have no problem seeing this movie opening weekend. Because it will not be sold out.
Yes. Inception is Christopher Nolan's follow-up to The Dark Knight,
and that alone is gonna sell an ungodly amount of tickets.
Yeah, a boatload of tickets. And you know what? To his credit, this seems like a very big, ambitious, heady action film.
It's a very
difficult thing to do, and it looks great.
It's got Leo DiCaprio and Ellen Page and Michael Caine and Ken Watanabe and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Marion Cotillard, and Cillian Murphy and Tom Berenger.
I haven't seen that guy since Major League 2.
I was so excited. His name's on the poster.
And Tom Hardy from what's it called? What did I just see him in? Where he was the violent guy. Bronson. Tom Hardy from Bronson.
Yes. I think it's going to be a cool movie. The conceit of the film is that it's a securities firm that sets up a dream world and then invites clients to come in and lock their secrets away in this dream world. And then they go in and steal their secrets.
Yes.
So it's essentially robbing people of their secrets and their dreams. And a lot of really cool effects in this thing.
Cities going vertical and horizontal. Very cool.
Yeah. July 23rd.
Yes.
We have Salt.
Big, exciting, classy action film.
Yeah, it looks like they're trying to market it as the newborn, no?
Possibly, yeah. You know, it was originally written for a man.
It was originally written for Tom Cruise, no?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it was originally Edwin Salt, and they changed it to Evelyn Salt for Angelina Jolie. Could be good.
Could be solid. I've got but I don't know enough about the film to talk about it with any kind of credibility.
Yeah, also this weekend, Dinner for Schmucks, the remake of Les Dinner des Cons.
Yes. A great film.
Really great French film. I think it's on, on demand in Netflix.
Yeah, definitely check it
really
out.
Really outstanding thing.
My coworker went to a preview screening of this film and told me all about it. Yeah, he said that the problem they're going to encounter is that Steve Carell plays the role, or they wrote the role in such a way that it's not that he's eccentric or dumb. It's that he's actually kind of straight up mentally retarded.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, that could blow up on them. He also said Zach Galifianakis is hilarious in it.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. It's directed by Jay Roach, who directed the Austin Powers movie and the Meet the Parents movies. And you know what? He knows what he's doing when he's directing a comedy, so we'll see. July 30th is a weirdly small weekend.
Yeah.
There's Get Low, the new Robert Duvall movie with Bill Murray that looks outstanding.
Yeah.
And Sissy Spacek about a hermit who decides he wants to give himself a living wake and force everyone in town to come and speak about him.
Could be a nice
his own funeral.
Could be a nice little movie in the middle of summer. Like, yeah, it's kind of in that once in the it's in that once sort of spot.
Yeah. Also, that week is I Love You, Philip Morris, which
has been actually coming out?
It looks like it. It's been bounced around all over the place. This is a Jim Carrey, Ewan McGregor movie, where Jim Carrey is a scam artist. Who goes behind bars and falls in love with Ewan McGregor's character in prison. Then he gets released from prison and spends the rest of the movie trying to break back into prison.
It's
been bounced around a lot because of hardcore homosexual themes. Is that right?
I guess. I think they didn't know how to sell it. I hear
really great things about it.
Yeah, it's supposed to be very funny. I guess it's just it's a tough sell outside of the coast.
Well, yeah, check out the top two message board comments are, this movie is disgusting, and can you accept Jim as a gay?
Question mark. As a gay? Well, let's first put aside the fact that the IMDb's message board is literally the lowest place on earth.
Yeah.
The lowest point in the internet. It is awful. Never go there.
Also this weekend, Beastly.
Yeah.
Which is counter-pro.
There's only one reason why this is on my radar.
There are two.
Oh, okay.
There is one Neil Patrick Harris.
Yes, as a blind mentor character.
Yeah, and there was one more. Hold on, where is it? Peter Krause.
Oh, okay. So this is sort of like Beauty and the Beast for the Twilight set, where this guy
and
is
it's shot exactly that way.
Yeah, it really is. He messes with a witch character played by Mary-Kate Olsen, and turns reasonably but not too unattractive.
Yeah, he just looks like he had a shaved head.
Who is this guy, Alex Pettyfer, and am I going to have to see him on the cover of Tiger Beat when I go to pick it up every week?
He was the titular Stormbreaker in Alex Rider Stormbreaker.
Oh, of course. How could I have forgotten?
All right, moving on.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about Cats and Dogs, The Revenge of Kitty. Nah, I'm not even going to finish.
We're done. August 6th, super exciting. Other Guys.
The trailer for this looked solid, like really, really entertaining.
Yeah, it's the new Will Ferrell-Adam McKay collaboration, which is always a good thing.
Yeah.
Also starring Mark Wahlberg as Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg play the guys who do all the paperwork for badass cops like The Rock and Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, my God. That was a coup to get those guys as the main guys in The Other Guys.
And then it turns out that maybe Will Ferrell's buttoned-down normal guy is actually a lot more hard-ass than he appears to be.
Yeah. I understand people's reluctance to this movie. Will Ferrell is a hugely overexposed comic actor, but whenever he works with Adam McKay, you get something special. And I have a feeling that this movie will absolutely continue that tradition.
All right, and then we have a Step Up to the Streets 3D for everyone.
5 is the number of reservations I have about seeing this movie. I don't know. People like this. People love these Step Up movies, and the attraction of 3D leads me to believe it could be a success, despite either of us seeing it.
Yeah. August 13th, Eat, Pray, Love.
Yes, that's the movie we should talk about first this weekend.
Nope. Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yay! Frankenmine's already, I would say, favorite movie that came out this summer, even though it hasn't come out yet and neither of us have seen it.
We've discussed this movie on the podcast a lot, and I imagine we will be discussing this podcast quite a bit on a weekly basis.
Yep. The Expendables also comes out this weekend. We've also talked about that before.
The Stallone film with everyone.
Yeah, and then Eat, Pray, Love.
Yeah.
Ryan Murphy, the co-creator of Glee and creator of Nip Tuck. adapts the popular novel. I don't know.
With Julia Roberts.
Sorry, guys. I don't know what to tell you.
August 20th, Takers.
With the most Photoshop poster ever.
And also, finally, Nanny McPhee returns.
Thank you. Actually, you know what, Frank? Nanny McPhee, pretty good. I'll say it. I saw the original on HBO one time. I enjoyed it.
And also this week is The Switch, which used to be known as The Baster, which was a huge Blacklist script 2 or 3 years ago, and it's had several switches. It stars Jennifer Aniston and Jason Bateman.
How annoyed are you that they took this title, Frank?
Huh? I'll live.
Okay.
I think the better title is The Baster. I think The Baster would have been like a solid... The Switch is an entirely generic title for this movie.
What is the premise of this film? I'm mostly unfamiliar.
It's that a 40-year-old woman, played by Jennifer Aniston, uses a turkey baster in order to become pregnant.
Yeah.
But she doesn't realize that her completely platonic guy pal, Jason Bateman, actually got drunk and switched the sperm, the donor sperm, with his own sperm because he's secretly in love with her.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I'd see it for Bateman. That sounds like a good premise, plus him is solid combination.
It was a really huge script, and I think it's just going to languish. I hope not, though. It looks like it could be fun.
Yeah. Okay, next week. Now this, you asked me what my guilty pleasure of the summer is. This is it. Piranha 3D. This looks like so much fun.
Yeah, the trailer for this looks really outstanding. Rami, you want to read some of the names on the cast list here?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's a who's who of Do You Remember?
Come on.
No.
It's a who's who of who does Frank think of on a daily basis?
Yeah, Adam Scott from Party Down and soon to be Parks and Recreation is, I guess, the clean-cut good guy. Elizabeth Shue, Christopher Lloyd, Eli Roth as Wet T-Shirt Contest MC. Perfect casting for Eli Roth, by the way.
One Mr. Ving Rhames.
Yeah. Hopefully in Dawn of the Dead remake mode, I would love to see
one
him do that.
Mr. Richard Dreyfuss, who appears...
That's going to be brilliant.
Who appears in the trailer in a dinghy wearing his same outfit from Jaws.
Oh, well, yeah. That's all you need to do to sell Frank and me a ticket, yeah. Really.
One Mr. Paul Scheer.
Yes, Paul Scheer is the cameraman for the... Jerry O'Connell, sleazy Girls Gone Wild host.
Yeah, okay. I think this movie's going to be some kind of great.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited. And the gore, there's lots of gore being promised. It's going to be in 3D. Hopefully it won't look muddy. Alexandra Aya did what's it called? That slasher movie I really liked Until the End. What was it called? Hot Tension. High Tension.
Yeah.
Really very entertaining slasher film Until the End, when they make a very dumb twist. He also did the American remake of Hills Have Eyes, which is also, if you are into slasher remakes, very solid.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the end of the summer. Oh, Happy Thank You More, Please. Is that right?
Yeah, that's Josh Radnor. Josh Radnor. Tad Mosby from How I Met Your Mother's.
He directed it and he stars in it. And
it's his Garden State.
Well, it was like a Sundance darling.
Yes, so, it was.
Yeah.
And Centurion, Neil Marshall, who did... Doomsday.
Yes.
And he did The Descent and Dog Soldiers, all movies I actually really enjoy. Also very solid genre outings. This is his big, giant Roman action film with star Michael Fassbender, who was in Inglourious Basterds and Hunger and Fish Tank, all movies I really enjoyed, Dominic West from The Wire, and Olga Kurylenko from Quantum of Solace.
Yeah, I think it should be good. So that's our whole summer. Rami, do you have anything in particular that you want to say to cap off that summer?
Yes. My two favorite movies this summer, I'm going to predict, are going to be Scott Pilgrim and Marmaduke. Hello?
Yeah, that's what you're going to... All right, that's fine.
It's a sequel. It's a sequel remake heavy summer.
Yeah,
those bright spots of smaller, more powerful films, and we'll let you know if there's any solid documentaries or indie films in the middle that are worth your time. I think
indeed.
Look to Splice. Look to Get. What's it called? Get Low.
Get Low.
Get Low. Splice for these little pockets of less bigness should be worth your time.
All right, that looks like that's all we have time for this week. But we have a couple of questions. Sorry we didn't get to those this week, but we will keep them on file. And please send more questions. We'll get to them first thing next week.
Absolutely.
And if you have any questions, you can always contact us at cave76podcast@gmail.com. Mm.
You can contact us on Twitter. I am at thesickness83.
And I am at Frank Angonis. That's A-N-G-O-N-E-S.
That's right. You can also check out our show notes. Please, they'll be up within the next day or two.
And hopefully, hopefully Rami will correct the show notes from last time.
Yeah. I'll put in your pictures. You can check that out at www.sicknesscinema.com. And check out our group on Facebook.
Yep.
Just go to Cave76 Podcast and become a fan, and we'll notify you of updates there. Also, rate us and write comments about us on iTunes. We love to get it.
Indeed. And Rami, I think that we're right in the thick of the summer. Do you have anything you want to say to the summer as we're approaching it?
Summer, I'm going to spend a lot of money getting movies, buying movie tickets. I hope it is a good one. Frank, do you have anything to say this summer?
MacGruber! MacGruber!
He's coming to Athena soon, MacGruber!
And until next time. Let them all go to hell, except Cave 76.
Hay un amigo en mí. Hay un amigo en mí. Cuando salgan.